Hey, what's going on, guys? You're welcome. And then I do it. Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Marcus the Maniac McGee, and you're watching The Marcus Deegan Show.
The Marcus Deegan Show!
Don't try to do an intro like that once you've had a big night. What's the story, guys? Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Deegan. You know who I am, shooting from Sin City, Las Vegas, the place of bright lights and world title fights. Thanks for coming back to my channel and joining us for another great episode. I've got another badass in the building. And I feel really honored today because I asked him, you know, you're here for the fights, right? You're here for UFC 300. And he's like, nah, I'm just here for this. So for him to come and spend his time to come into my studio and jump on my little program, it means a lot to me. You can, I like people that have a lot of options and accolades and things about them. So let me tell you a little bit about this guy. He's a husband, first and foremost. He's a dad. He's a skateboarder. He's a cook. He's a podcaster. Oh, and he fights in the bantamweight division of the UFC. I just thought I'd throw that one in. Would you please welcome to the podcast? He doesn't look like a maniac, but I'm sure he is. Marcus the Maniac McGee. What's the story, brother?
What's going on?
What's up, buddy? I've been trying to get you on this podcast for a minute.
It has. It's been a while. That's why I knew I needed to get up here. I was like, man, I'm putting the time aside. I'm rolling up there. Whatever it takes, it's going to happen.
Do you have much free time?
I wouldn't say free time. No. You know, I always, in between the garden too, you know, it's like, no, I don't really have a whole lot of free time, but I make it that way.
What do you mean in the garden?
I have a garden too at home. So I do my little gardening at home.
Oh, shit. So we got to throw gardener into the mix as well. Yeah. And the gardener. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what do you grow? All your own food?
So yeah, all my own food right now. It's all, I'm like my fifth garden in, my fifth harvest in. So right now I got some, broccoli, cauliflower, eggplant, different tomatoes, squash, zucchini, cucumbers, potatoes, just the whole nine.
Wow. Yeah. So about being self-sufficient is something that obviously means a lot to you, hence the way that the world's going. We might need to be able to grow our own food. Why do you grow your own food?
I just like the option of being able to. And like for me, it's like the more things I put on my plate to learn and try to achieve, like I stay away from things I shouldn't be into. So it's another one of those things that help me. Another thing is, like, I was into hydroponic growing cannabis for a long time. That's what I did as a living. So I was like, man, I can grow weed, but I can't grow any plants, like regular plants. I have a regular garden.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I want to start understanding like the microbiome of the soil, and I want to start understanding more of the plant and the chemical breakdowns and all these things. So it was like, all right, how do you learn? You do it, right?
Yep, that's it. Isn't that weird that like people like you and I that spent so many years putting – fucking bad shit in our body, once you stop doing all that, you kind of literally do a 360 degrees with what you want to put in your body. Isn't that insane?
Yeah, it's a little different. I don't know if it's a chemical change in the mind or what it is, but it's definitely, I think, a thing that is across the board.
You hit the nail on the head. It is a chemical change in your mind. And this is what I say to a lot of people when I talk about getting sober. You need a good 2 years under your belt before your brain even starts working properly again. For someone that pumps the drugs or booze into them, like I did daily for many, many years, decades and decades and decades, it takes a minute, man. It takes a minute. How's your sober journey been?
Not too crazy. I mean, not necessarily sober. Like I said, I smoke cannabis mostly.
I wouldn't consider that as not.
Yeah.
It's different for weed smokers. We don't consider it as a drug, really.
Yeah.
It's more of a way of life. And I wouldn't go as far as calling it medicine either, but maybe a way of life to. I just feel I'm a better person when I'm smoking weed.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's the same way. You know, I think the intent behind it is a little different for me as well, too. More along those lines as well, lifestyle. And things like that. So, but yeah, for me, you know, again, like having the family and putting my focus on them has kept me away from a lot of the other things that I used to get into when I was younger. Because same with me, you know, drinking, drugs, parties, women, all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Those are my focuses.
With those pretty green eyes that you have there, I'm sure that the women would just love going to that. Because I know there's a look. You have that look. We had a guy in Thunder from Down Under that had that look, that kind of Polynesian look, but with the light eyes, and the women absolutely loved it. So I'm sure you were very successful with the ladies before you met your lovely wife.
Yeah, you know, something like that.
Yeah, that was kind of a little gay, wasn't it, actually? I'm
That's
complimenting
okay.
about his eyes. But you know what? I worked in the industry, like, before I got into this kind of work. I was in the entertainment industry. Entertainment was what I did. So I would judge someone that worked in the industry that I did. In the show that I was in, it was all dudes that were in physically top performance shape. You know, when you're doing like Chippendales and Thunder from Down Under, these guys have got to look. So I would, I'm used to being able to pick guys out of a crowd and know, you know, what women would like.
Yeah, no, that's all good. Me, Kyler always says it all the time. Any post I have up, if they get me a good shot of me and catch my eyes, she's like, oh, well, those eyes were so mesmerizing. You know, me and him get crazy.
When who says together. That?
Kyler Phillips.
I suppose when you're good looking and you're in the UFC, I mean, who else was really, let me think. Who were some of the real good looking dudes that were in the UFC? If I can think of one off the top of my head, it would be Luke Rockhold.
Yeah, for sure. He's probably like that.
Paulo
Costa, you have to throw him in the mix.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, especially his fucking body. Did you see his physique? I mean, his physique is insane.
Crazy. Yeah, crazy. I would say Kyler's up there too, you know, with that hair. Everybody, you know. He's dreamy.
Yeah. So I always, now that when I see you, and if I see really cool skateboarding stuff on Instagram, I always send it to you. That's also something that's a way of life as well, right? Absolutely. You've probably been skateboarding since you were a young fella.
Yeah, I think I started skating when I was like 12 years old. That's when I picked it up, and it just stuck with me through all the times, basically, you know. And at higher levels and lower levels as the time went, obviously. But, yeah, I feel like that's a way of life. I see myself being 50, you know, still skateboarding.
I mean, that in itself is another sport that fucking causes a lot of injury. Mm-hmm. Have you had injuries from skateboarding, or have you been pretty good?
Oh, yeah, I had injuries, but back in the day. Like, the skateboarding I do now, my focus right now is to get consistent with my tricks, get consistent with how I feel on the board, so focus on more basic stuff and stay away from, like, stairs and handrails and all the stuff that, like,
kill you.
Yeah, you know, and just get hurt, right? I'm training, you know, twice a day, so it's like, when if I take a good fall at the skate park and I got two training sessions a day, it's just like, I understand.
Because that. I guarantee you're not wearing elbow pads or knee pads, are you, Marcus McGee?
Or a helmet. Part of me wants to. I'm like, man, maybe I need to, maybe I need to start doing, I know I talked stuff about that for years and years, but maybe we'll see.
So are you into the culture of it? Are you into like dirt bikes and stuff as well, like Travis Pastrana and the Deegans and all those kind of people that are in that kind of Steve-O and all that kind of, in that realm of, what sport would you call it? Like,
extreme sports.
Extreme sports. That's it. Yeah, extreme sports. Are you into all that?
Yeah, so extreme sports, like, again, that was like the thing that kept me, like, that kept my attention growing up was a lot of people wanted, like, basketball, football. I played a little bit of those things, like, in the streets and little, but I always liked extreme sports. And I mean, I couldn't dirt bike or do anything like that just because we were broke. We didn't have nothing like that. So, but it was, I appreciated it from the outside. And then when they came out with Triple X and Vin Diesel was doing everything between skateboarding and snowboarding, I was like, yeah, Rocket Power. I'm always wearing Rocket Power clothes. Like, Rocket Power was a big one for me too. I like it all.
Yeah, I was into Vans and Dickies and fucking, that I love the clothing. That I was never really good at surfing, and I grew up in Australia. I was never really good at surfing, but I was always pretty good at skateboarding. Not too bad.
Okay,
at it,
so. Okay, we got to hit a session. What about now?
Well, I have a fucking ruptured Achilles at the moment.
Oh, dang, never mind.
So until I get the surgery done, I'm kind of out with anything. Like my boxing training, everything is out. Walking long distances is out.
Yeah, definitely anything to strain that area.
Yeah, bro, which was a bad one. But so like, but you're pretty injury free.
Yeah,
all around, right? You've never had surgeries?
No, I have. Yeah, so I've had a couple different surgeries, but this is the biggest one probably. I was snowboarding, 2018? Got my arm chopped off, basically. Somebody ran over my arm with their snowboard.
No way.
Yeah.
Really? Do you have photos of that?
I do, yeah. It's on my Instagram. So if you go back to my Instagram, it was like when I was first about to dial in, I was like, man, I'm about to go pro. It's all good. You can see my Instagram starting off, and it's a couple pictures of me getting new gear, and then it's a picture of my arm being cut wide open and all my tendons being severed.
So how did that happen? You fell over, and then someone just ran over the top of you? Something that easy?
No, I'm honestly, it was partially my fault, so I take the blame for it. But we were coming down. I forget what it's not the bunny hill, but it's the hill to get to the actual drop in for you to actually start bombing.
And where's that?
This is up in Stobo in Arizona.
Okay.
And like I set off to the side, not in the middle, but I set off to the side, but my back to the mountain. It was very slow slope, though. You shouldn't be moving fast there. So I didn't think anything of it. I needed to fix my boots. Went to go fix my boots, got them all ready, went to hop up. You put your arms down to hop up, girl hits my arm. Boom! I was like, man, I thought it was just maybe broken or just really hurt at first.
So it hurt?
Yeah, right away. I was like, I knew it was hurt, but I didn't think it was that bad. And she was like, you need to get down. We need to get you help. And I'm like, no,
Did it start bleeding at all?
Yeah, it was bleeding. I didn't see it at this point. She saw the blood first.
What did you have on? A t-shirt?
No, I had my snowboarding jacket.
And it was coming, and the blood was coming through the jacket?
All over the snow.
Fuck.
Like, it was everywhere.
No!
Like, I didn't even notice. She was like, I don't think you're okay. And she pointed down, and I was like, oh.
It's just a flesh wound.
Literally, that's how I was acting about it, you know? And then I was supposed to grab her and take her down with me, and that's how, like, the insurance works. I didn't know any better. Somebody was like, bro, get down to the bottom of the mountain. I, you know, finished strapping back in, put some snow on it, put my glove on it, and just, you know, down the mountain to get some help. So,
and then you're in for a fucking 3-month recovery process with that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So what happened is that you had to go and get it stitched up and all the tendons reconnected.
Yep, all the tendons reconnected.
Does that have any effect on the way that you clinch your fist and punch?
No, not now. No, it did. And I really worked on it because this finger was the biggest, like these ones were the biggest ones that were the hardest to curl. And you can still see like the flexion of it and everything. You can still see it moving and
yeah,
all that good stuff. But I had to break through that. I had scar tissue, so it wouldn't let me bend it all the way. It pops still, but like I don't feel it. It's all good.
What would you say is, like, you seem to do a lot of things, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, but what would be your greatest achievement out of everything that you've done, like sports, family, fucking whatever?
That's my greatest achievement is my kids and my family, you know, like to be able to be a family man and be there for my children and be present. And, I mean, that's got to be the biggest thing.
Was your old man present for you?
No. So my dad wasn't present. And, you know, again, different lifestyles and everything. My dad went to jail when I was really young.
Yeah.
And then...
Like how young?
Like I was like 4 years old when he went to jail.
Do you remember him going to jail?
So I do. I remember...
Flashbacks?
Flashbacks of like people surrounding the house and everything like that.
Oh, so he did something bad?
Yeah.
Can you talk about what he did?
Yeah, so my dad, he went to... I don't necessarily know the... I haven't asked him or sat down with him and asked the whole thing, you know what I'm saying? But I know that people got hurt.
Right.
And
was there weapons
involved?
Some people
got unalive.
Oh, okay. You know? Yeah. Wow. That's got to be intense for you to have on your heart.
Yeah. No, 100%. It definitely played a big part in like me growing up. And a lot of people told me like, oh, you remind me of your dad. You're going to be a lot like your dad. Because I was really like angry and aggressive when I was younger. So, and then I didn't know him because I had only met him like maybe one time, twice throughout the whole before he actually got out of jail. So I didn't quite know, but that all played a part in my life for sure.
When did he get out of jail?
He got out when I was just about to turn 18, so right before I turned 18.
And you don't have a relationship with him now?
So we do have a relationship now.
Oh, you do? Oh, mm-hmm. Good. Mm-hmm. Is it good?
Yeah, our relationship is good. You know, like I'm blessed to have a father who's alive and doing well and, you know, working and married and doing his thing. So our relationship wasn't the greatest for a long time, but... you know, I think you have to get past some of the things that we forget and you know, look for the blessings that we actually have. And that's what we kind of tried to focus on.
And that's when, that's when it always feels better. Because if you've had a difficult relationship with a parent and then you know, like you said, you break through that barrier, those walls, and you get past it, you become extra close and it just means a lot more. I agree with you. I was the same with my old man. We fucking butted heads up until... I moved to America, as a matter of fact. It wasn't until I moved over here and he saw what I was doing with my life. And then we were like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, yeah, I can get what you say. But how many kids do you have now?
So I have 4 kids, 3 girls and 1 boy.
Strap that thing up.
I already did, man. That thing's strapped to the side.
Do you wear like a rubber band around it now?
I do, yep. Yeah. I only take it out for like special occasions.
You know? You just look at that fucking thing and you're 8 months pregnant.
100%, man.
Damn, you know, what is it with that? You got that those super swimmers.
Super swimmers. I don't know what it is, you know, but my wife was trying to get another one, but I was like, nah, it's you or me. And we had to take care of that.
Oh, really? So you took care of it?
Yeah, no, she decided to.
Oh, she decided to.
And it was because it was free for her based off our insurance, and it would have cost me like $400. And then I was like, oh, I'll still get it done. She's like, what do you need to get it done for?
you're like, yeah, you're right.
Like double trouble. Like, yeah. We're done. Like, it's a blessing for sure, but it's like I didn't have any idea that I would actually be able to be there for my children and provide for them. And
why?
Just because I didn't have that.
Just when the way you know, that you, yeah, you didn't have that instilled into you from your growth, yeah.
And even the stepfather I had, you know, even I respected what he did do, he didn't show me how to be the man that I am still.
Who
you know?
Told you, who showed you that?
I honestly think 2 men in particular are like and I wrote a thing about them in high school too. My Uncle Mike, he he was a huge, huge inspiration for me just for everything he went through. And then my grandfather, like, he would sit down, just the way he would try to get me to think and always tell me to be using my mind and let me know that I do have a brain and that I can utilize it and can be, you know, articulate in the way I speak, and I don't have to necessarily go down these stereotypical roads, you know?
Yeah.
And I can still be authentic to who I am and where I'm from, you know? So those are the two people in particular that really, like, kind of gave me some footing in life. And then throughout life, still other people's parents and other people I've met through my
coaches
life.
Coaches and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your heritage?
I'm black. So
you're black?
Yeah, so African-American. My mom says that we're a couple of different things. Like, we got some French in there. We have some Indian in there. But for the most part, both my parents are African-American. So it's pretty crazy.
Where'd the light eyes come from?
So my granddad has hazel eyes on her side, had hazel eyes. And I guess there's some similarities there. But, you know, I never really saw, like, crazy similarities. But there is some similarities there.
Has your dad got light eyes?
No, my dad definitely does not. No. Mm. Yeah. 100%. I questioned it for a long time.
It's like, Mom, come on now.
Not even did I just question. So because I was born, like, white, basically, right? So white.
Yeah, because you're not dark.
Yeah.
I always thought that when I first saw you, I thought you were maybe like Hawaiian or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Kyler's one of the, he always says I look like I'm, like, you know, Cuban something like that. So definitely kind of different looking for sure, you know. But yeah, both my parents are African-American, and I just came out looking like this. My brothers and sisters used to say it when I was growing up all the time that I was a milkman's child. I used to get way more mad when I was younger.
Yeah.
They used to call me white boy all the time, you
really?
Know.
Who, your brother and sister would call you white boy?
My brother, but all of them, they'd just be on me. Like, are you even from our same family? Like, are you sure?
Yeah, you're like that tall Kardashian, you know, the one that they say is not.
Yeah, Khloe. Yeah, Khloe for sure. I'm like Khloe. Yep.
Oh, fuck, that's funny. Yeah, I mean, but brothers and sisters are allowed to do that to each other. But do you know now that you're officially theirs?
Yeah, I mean, we never, but yes, but, like, that's my brother. Like, we all have so many similarities. Like, even though I'm light-skinned, I look like them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you have one brother and one sister?
I have one sister, two brothers.
Are they older?
So my brother's older than me, then my brother Marvin's older than me, and then my sister's younger than me, and then I have a brother who's younger than me.
And how old's the youngest one?
I think he just turned 30. He might have just turned 30.
Can any of them fight?
I mean, they'll say they can. You know what I'm saying? I give them a hard time. It's different, you know. I tell them all the time. But, I mean, they got me into tons of fights, you know what I'm saying?
Because you could get them out of fights. Yeah, they got, have you always been a tough cunt?
I've definitely always been the guy who was like, hey, who's fighting? Yeah, me, you know? Like,
that was always you?
Always been me.
So
man.
You've always been able to fight?
Yeah. It's something that I was, like, really interested in as a kid, and I didn't get a chance to train, like, a lot. I didn't have the opportunity to really, like, dive into my obsession with training, but I loved martial arts as a kid.
Your training was on the streets, baby. Yeah,
definitely was in the streets, too, but I was training at home, you know, anything I could pick up on, any style that I could pick up on, meditate, anything.
Really?
Like, my mom would say it, my grandparents would say it, like, I was training twice a day still, you know, not because someone told me, but because I was interested in how to use a 6-foot staff or 6-foot pole, and, you know, how to use nunchucks and how to do, like, I was always interested in
martial arts. So martial arts movies as well, like Bruce Lee movies, Rocky.
All Bruce Lee, Donnie Yen.
Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan is my man. Yeah, Jet Li. Jet Li was, like, crazy, you know, Black Mask. I was like, so all that stuff. And it took me a long time to realize, like, the levels to it and where things are effective and not, you know, like, and mixed martial arts helped me cue a lot of that in, but I would say my first even, like, actual traditional martial arts that I did under a person was Wing Chun, and it was under Sifu Mark Bakir, who's now in prison for a long time. But
what's it with these guys called Mark?
Yeah. Dude, let's try not to be on there too.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, but you don't do anything illegal anymore.
Yeah,
right?
No.
You got too much to fucking lose. Dude.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I haven't done anything illegal in a long time. Honestly, I try to be focused on the things that are important, you know, and I don't try to put myself in places where I know that, you know, I can
fuck up
100%
because it's in you. It's still there. You're just suppressing it and keeping control of that guy.
100%,
which is, it takes a lot more than to do that than some guy that just fucking goes off and loses it. And, you know, to be the guy that can do it, but have to, you know, keep it at bay. Mm-hmm. That's power right there.
Yeah. That's like the stove, like, like a stoic quote. I can't think of it, but that's exactly what it is. It feels like a power of mind that I've gathered over time for sure.
Sobriety will give you that too, getting your mind clear of everything. And then also, I suppose having kids, I wasn't blessed to have kids. I have animals, lots of them, and they kind of substitute as my kids, but I have never been blessed to have kids, but I know how protective I feel even over my animals.
Yeah.
So I can only assume what it's like to have four kids.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of soft spots I have in life, but yeah, that's my life, you know?
But you seem like such a, without insulting you, a soft guy, Marcus. Yeah. You seem like a soft-hearted, soft-spoken man.
I got to give that credit to my kids, you know?
Like, really?
Like, my relationship that I've built with them, not just my kids, but I have to say my wife, too, because learning how to overcome a lot of things that I was to be a good husband, not just a husband, but a present good husband to her, and then also be a present good father to my children, and trying to understand them opposed to coming in with that masculine energy that, like,
I'm the dad, I'm the ruler, I lead the house.
100%, you know.
And you had to learn that as you went on?
Yeah, so it's definitely great. Something that I've had to learn, and I have to give them all the kudos in the world, because they're why I had to learn, because I want them to trust me. I want them to know that I have their back in good and bad, you know? I want them to be able to come to me and talk to me and conversate.
And do they?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
How old's your oldest?
My oldest is 14.
Boy or a girl?
Girl.
Oof, fuck, mm-hmm. How's that?
She's my best friend. You know, and I know it's hard for a lot of people to say that, but like, she is she was the beginning of it. The love I had to give her, it blessed me in such a big way, because it gave me the ability to have this vulnerability and be confident in that vulnerability and understand what that emotion and feeling is, and still know that the other guy is there. Like, he's there too. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
But what am I going to feed? You know, what do I want to feed? I want to feed this.
That guy, yeah.
100%. Because I could see the benefits of that guy from her, you know, and how I interact with her and how her emotions feel and how she goes into her life and different things like that.
So is she at the boy crazy stage yet?
Not boy crazy. She does like a boy. But again, it's beautiful because I gave them the platform to be able to come to me and be like, hey, I like this person. I want to talk to this person. And then for us to have a conversation, like, what does that mean? And then also talk about it biblically as well, so that they can understand that side of it as well.
That's a must.
100%, right? So that they understand that it's not just a conversation between me that they're having, but it's a conversation between God that they're going to have as well, you know? So, like, adding that into the whole mix of it for them to make their own decisions, because they're their own people. Like, whether or not I want to be that father who is overbearing, they are their own people. They're going to go off to be their own lives. And I'd rather them bring me into that life and me be able to help and be there and help them when they do fall down, and them be willing to do that because they don't feel like I'm about to just be gone the moment they let me know.
Mm.
It's super important to me.
Yeah, I'm having a little bit of a problem with the transition from my girl, Jennifer. Her little sister, who is now 12, has been in my life since she was a year old. Now she's hit 12. And it's makeup, clothes. I see a few boy things on her TikTok. And I'm having a real problem with accepting it.
Yeah. And it's hard too, right? Because like, you don't want it for them, but you do want it for them, right? They're alive, you know, and love and all these things that come apart. And those feelings, those are all real feelings that they're going to have to deal with. And the only thing we can do is help them to make the right decisions with those feelings. Because they're human beings, you know? Like...
I knew it was going to happen, though. I would say it years ago to Jen. I'd be like, I don't like this, man. He's going to be I don't know. Maybe it's because of the traumatic things that happened to me when I was a kid. I worry about them happening to her as well. I don't know what it is. Maybe something deep-rooted. Who knows? But I have a problem with her transforming from that little girl that was singing Frozen and wearing a Minnie Mouse shirt to fucking putting on lip gloss and looking like a chola, and I have a problem with it.
It's funny you say that. That's my daughter for sure, my daughter. but she doesn't get too crazy, like, and she has her different days, and I tell her to, like, absorb all that, be in all that, you know.
Does she have a phone?
Yeah, she has a phone too, you know what I'm
and
saying?
And you have access to that phone?
Complete access.
She have social media?
Just Instagram.
She just has Instagram?
Yep.
No TikTok or anything like that?
I think she has TikTok too that she watches.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do TikToks and stuff like that.
Right, so, but she's not over-sexualized. Like, I see a lot of these young, man, it's It's got to stem back to fucking what happened to me when I was a kid, I reckon. But I have a problem with seeing younger people as older, like whether it's makeup, whether it's short shorts or anything like that. I have an issue. That's why I suppose a lot of this hidden dark side of the elites really fucking bothers me a lot.
No, 100%. And again, like I'm blessed the fact that she doesn't even want to do that type of stuff. Like good, she has good. Her own style, and her style is cool because it's authentic to her, right? But yeah. I've always told her, like, that's what you, like, break into whatever styles you need to do to feel good about yourself and be worth, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, yeah, she's not into any of that stuff. But I think a lot of that plays, because even my youngest girls, my two youngest are bubbly and cutest little things ever. I worry more about them because of how cute they are, you know? And my daughter, my oldest daughter is cute too, but she's like, you know, she's her own person, you
know? Do you see that in her now? Like that maturity, that kind of turning into a woman, her own person. I don't have to worry about her. She knows how to make her own decisions. Are you at that stage with her?
I really feel that way about her.
Oh, like, that's good, man.
We're also always working, and she always has to, but I really feel that way about her. And my two youngest, all my kids are phenomenal kids, honestly, but the world is a crazy place, right? And
yeah,
it tells
man.
You to be whoever you are. And just like you said, from life things, you know, trauma is going to be there.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, okay, you know what? A lot of the trauma that I ended up having to go through is because I didn't have anybody who I can go to around me and be like, hey, like, this is, you know what I'm saying? This is how I'm feeling. This is what's going on.
Yeah. And even if you did, it'd be, yeah, fucking whatever. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. Or don't do, or you better not.
Yeah.
You better not.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Opposed to like, hey, well, let's talk about it. Like, what's going on? What's going on with your mind? How are you feeling? What are you thinking about? And it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, everything you talk about is going to happen just because you're still saying it. But it's like, let's work through this and see where we're at with this. You know what I'm saying? Let's really think this through, opposed to getting too emotional about it.
See, this is just the prime example of, like, when they say, why is there so much, why are kids fucking up so much these days? Because they don't have a mum and a dad that are together, for one, and that are instilling these life lessons into them. When it's one parent, you got these 14, 15-year-old boys that are just running around like fucking criminals and maniacs. So it comes down to having a mum and dad. Like, man, I still remember stuff from that I never thought was traumatic when I was a kid, right? Your uncle rubbing up against you with a boner, right? That's probably not something that, you know.
You didn't get excited about that?
But you know what I mean? I always refer back to that because I didn't really know that was, you know, something wrong, especially when you go to a parent and tell them and they shush it or they undermine it or they push it away. So I'm glad that you have that relationship with your daughter, man.
Yeah, very important.
And probably because all of her friends know that if anyone fucking messes around, they're getting fucked up.
I even love them more for the fact that they don't even tell their friends that I'm a fighter. You know what I'm saying?
Really?
They don't even tell their friends about it. Like, they're not, it's not that they're not proud of me, you know, because they are proud of me, but like, they don't find value like in that and using that to their advantage.
So have you ever had any of the friends come over and one of the little boys recognize you from the UFC?
Yeah, for my son though, because my son's 13. He's about to be in high school. He has a girl that he's trying to, that he likes too. But again, he's made me so proud because of how he's come at me, and we've talked about it and we went through this whole conversation because it's going to happen eventually. I could just help you work in what relationships mean at your age, at your stage, where you are, how you want it to progress, what you want to do, who are you trying to be to this young girl who's going to be a woman? What,
you know what he wants to be.
I know, I 100%. But honestly, talking to him more about it, like, he's brought biblical stuff up to me. You know?
Nice. Oh, like, that's great.
It's pretty cool because I didn't think that they were really with it, you know? Like, I didn't think that they, because we go to church pretty frequently and, you know, I do try to talk to them about God and Jesus Christ, and a lot of the music I listen to now is like really focused on that, and they come to our service as well. So it's like sometimes you can't tell whether or not things are like sinking in or they're like really grasping this or finding their own way. And I said something to him and he was like, man, he's like, I'm more along the lines of biblical anyways, Dad. I believe that you should wait until marriage and da da da. I was like, whoa, where did this even come from? Because I'm also like, yes, I want that for you. But the moment that you know you're going to do whatever you're going to do, come let me know. We need to learn what rubbers are. We need to learn how to stay protected. We need to learn, you know, like, we have to talk, really have this conversation about this so that you make good and right decisions. And when you do make that decision, you know you're making the wrong decision if you decide not to.
Fuck, I never had those conversations with my parents. Hey, did you, George?
Yeah. I was a bad kid. They knew I was out.
Like,
he was outside.
When you
were
13 or 14, were you like chasing chicks at that stage?
Yeah, like I was like leaving the house at night and like going and.
Were you a virgin at that age?
Finding parks.
Well, at a point, yeah. Well, yeah, it was finding parks or sneaking into windows.
Yeah,
that too.
That's when they were like, my mom gave me my first box of condoms like when I was like 13.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't happen for me for sure.
Yeah, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. We did it raw, my friend.
Yeah. I was told it's going to fall off if you use it. Then when it didn't fall off, I was like,
I'm doubling up.
Yeah.
I'm doubling up.
Yeah, everybody gets it. It's still here. You get some. There's plenty to go around.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. See, when you're sitting here talking to these guys in these podcasts, you don't realize how much of a fucking badass he is. Georgie, can we like pull something up so people around the world can just, and maybe Marcus can commentate through it and just let us know. Maybe it's the inside stuff. So we're going to talk about some of Marcus's knockouts here. Do you remember this one, Marcus?
Yeah. It's a Ronnie Mandala. I literally had just lost my job right before this and was like dialed in. I was like, man, all right, well, I got this fight coming up against a tough guy. You know, I saw he had been a champion in a different organization. And I was like, all right, let's go. This is my first pro fight right here. Nick Alwag. He had fought my teammate as an amateur. So when we took the fight, I was going to 35. I was excited to fight him because he was tough. They went 3 rounds. So I was pretty excited to get him out of there in the first.
Wow. And what a great knockout that was too.
Yeah. I feel like going southpaw orthodox coming up. So this is Rafael Montini. This is my third fight. And he was 6-3, I think, at the time. And like one of Fight Ready's like hot guys. And I was only 2-0. So I was like, man, this is a crazy opportunity. But let's go. I want it, you know.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody do a hammer fist like that from standing up.
Yeah, it's something I work in there.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, it's just like softening him up, you know? It's like I called it softening him up, but standing, you know?
Yes, I love it.
And then this is my second fight against, I can't think of his name. I know the Diamond is what his nickname was, though. And he was super tough, too. This one ended up being supposed to be a catchweight of 140 because he came in short notice. But he ended up being 142. But I was like, thank you so much for taking the fight. I don't care.
Yeah. What were you there?
What, in the cage?
Yeah, you looked heavy.
Oh, yeah. I was probably like, 50, above 55.
155,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Nice head kick. Another nice head kick there. Mm-hmm. I can think you're going to come in with that right hand.
Yeah. Boom.
Nice. Oh, it was the knee that dropped in. Beautiful.
Yeah. So that knee, I remember being so nasty. I knew he was done after that.
He looked like he was in pain, too.
Yeah, he was out. He was out for a little while.
Wow.
And he was a tough guy, too. This one was a catchweight as well because I took it on short notice. A bunch of short notices that couldn't. I was always trying to find fights, but it was a little bit hard. You know, I'm older. I trained at a good gym.
Yeah.
So.
Plus, you've never been put away like that.
Yeah.
Have you?
No, never.
You've never been knocked out.
Never.
You've never been choked out.
Yeah. I tap. Yeah, in the gym, like, you know, don't get me wrong. I've let myself get really close just to feel those feelings, you know. And being like pretty close, but no, like I'm not trying to get choked out. I'm trying to get better. You know?
With your one loss, what was that from?
From rear naked choke.
That was from the rear naked choke. Yeah. Was that a jiu-jitsu expert that got you in that?
Yeah, he was really good too. And I knew going into the fight, we knew that was his specialty, you know, because he has 6 wins by rear naked choke, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's his thing that he goes to, and he catches it really good on really high level guys. So we knew that was a thing. And then the mistakes were made, you know. And again, I just felt like my focus was on things I shouldn't have been focused on instead of just fighting, you know, and being there to fight.
So you're 9-1 now, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be you got to feel invincible just about not fucking losing and just whether you're knocking them out or choking them out, you're just putting everybody away.
I wish I could say that. I don't, you know, I don't. I say it all the time, like anybody can get touched, anybody can have a bad night. And I truly believe that, you know, so I try to show up every night and every practice with intent and just be there and be thankful for the things that I can't control, which is my output, my effort, you know, because, yeah, I don't know. I haven't caught into that invincibility thing. I know I have a long way to go. I know I have a lot more to learn.
So you feel like you're just getting started then, do you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do. I feel like I'm constantly getting better, stronger, you know, faster, more intelligent in multiple different aspects. And I think I kind of like that. I'd rather stay on that side.
Go gradually get better and better and better and better. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I can only imagine what it would feel like. I mean, as a civilian, it's hard for us to comprehend what it feels like just knowing that you can just fucking put anyone away at any time.
It is. It's like with great power comes great responsibility. You know,
that guy there's uncle said that
100%. And I guess it gives us that humility as well, though, especially training with a lot of different high level guys, being put in bad positions, especially if you're training with guys who care about you and who you care about. You should be getting put in bad positions. You should be feeling that fear regularly, not necessarily fear that you're going to get body harm, but knowing what it's like to be under somebody, knowing what it's like to be on the outside of punches, inside of punches, what those things feel like, and becoming comfortable in that area, you know?
Yeah, Chris Curtis was telling me that when he spars with Sean Strickland, that Sean's trying to put him away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not going 100%, of course, but he's putting him in a position that he needs to be put in.
Yeah, no, and that's a lot of it. And again, we really try to focus on not putting each other away. Like, that's not, but we're trying to land these shots at real speed, real time, right? And if we could pull just the end of that, so we're not really giving each other brain injuries and bodily damage, because that's the biggest thing, making it to fight healthy, right?
Yeah. And there's a fine line too, isn't there, really?
It really is, before it becomes, it's going to be disadvantageous to you for your actual fight. Where this
guy, it's like, you know, you're having a spar against someone that's known for going in there and trying to hurt you, and you're like, oh, fuck, I don't want to fight this guy because I know it. Does that happen a lot? Is there certain people that you can't spar against because you know they're going to go fucking 100%?
Not for me.
Not for you?
It's
a respect thing, right?
Yeah. And there is guys that I know will go like that. But it's like, I've had to learn how to go with those guys, right?
Yeah.
You know? Which makes me be more attentive too. Like, okay, maybe I'm going to have to work a lot more defense this round, because I need to be impeccable on my defense, because he's going to be throwing hard. He's going to be going hard. He's going to be hitting great angles. He's going to try to land it, which again gives you that outlook too. Is like, okay, my defense is good enough to be able to withstand when somebody's really trying to come at me as well. But sometimes we'll get into that ego thing, right? You want to bang it out, so I want to bang it out. Now we're both just banging it out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And egos can be your biggest enemy at most of the times.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell yourself when the referee says, are you ready? Is there something you're telling yourself in that moment upwards, or are you just...
Honestly, most of it's like, it would sound like prayer if you heard me in my head before. And not prayer of like...
God, like, please help me knock this guy out.
Yeah, nothing like that, you know what I'm saying? Nothing along that way. More like just thank you so much for life. Thank you so much for all these people's lives. Thank you so much for the opportunity that you've given us all. You know, like thank you. Like, that's kind of where I'm...
Gratitude, at.
100%.
Like, you've got to have full gratitude.
Yeah.
I see you getting a little emotional even when you say that.
Yeah.
That's good, man.
It brings a good... Like, for me, it brings a real good, like, energy to me. In the, like, it's freedom, you know what I'm saying? It's freedom from outcomes. Because it doesn't matter how great we are and how invincible we feel, we are only humans, you know what I'm saying? And that's the truth of it, you know? So... For me in particular, just pulling myself out of like all the extra outcomes and all the extra emotions and feeling, and just being rooted in the here and now, and the ability to be wherever we are, whether it's pain, whether it's joy, whatever it are, be in that, you know?
In the moment.
Yeah.
That's what I've found with this amazing new product that I've been taking, that it's really given me the opportunity to live more so right in the moment, instead of worrying about things that I've done in the past and things that haven't happened in the future. I've actually been able to concentrate more of in the moment. For example, this conversation that we're having right now, I'm completely indulged in it, because I'm not thinking about the 10 guys that I've got to interview at fucking 5 o'clock tonight, or damn, I should have wore the shirt that doesn't show my bitch tits. You know what I mean? I'm engaged in the moment, which is, you know, great segue into, you know, this episode is sponsored by Muse, which is great psilocybin infused mushroom products. If you want to change your life and, you know, think a little bit more clearer, maybe have a little bit more excitement, a bit more vividness. Don't take it from me. I'm just giving you my personal experience. But if you want to try it, you know what to do. Go to Muse. They'll help you out. Yeah, man. I really appreciate that, living in the moment. Took me a long time to work that out, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's going to be something we're continuously working out until we leave this earth, right?
Because
there's that, just like our heartbeat, like that rhythm up and down, and how far up and how far down you go, it depends, you know, but the highest high is the lowest low. So if you get too high, you're going to hit a low. If you get too low, it's like, no matter what, it is what it is, you know?
Do you think about that moment when you leave your body and your spirit? Do you ever think about that fucking final few seconds, or what happens right? Do you think about that?
I do, now that you mention it. Not like crazy thought about it, but it's like, it's absolutely a thought that has It has passed through my mind multiple times.
I like watching a lot of documentaries on people that have that were like dead for 30, 40 minutes and then they got revived and what happened to them when they crossed over. Mm-hmm. You interested in that kind of stuff? Does it scare you or anything?
It doesn't necessarily scare me. You know, honestly, like there was a point in my life where it was something that I had to overcome, you know, because there was that fear
of death.
Yeah, the fear of death. And it's because I always said it earlier on in life, oh, I'm going to die at 18. I'm not making it to 18. Oh, I'm going to die at 20. Oh, I'll be lucky to make 21. Oh, there's no way I'm making 24, you know? And then finally, after a while, I was like, where is my mind? Like, why am I focused on this? Yes, I'm going to die. It's going to happen, regardless if I like it or not. It's going to be a part of my life. And to be so afraid of something that every single living being is going to go through, I was like, man, that just seems...
Yeah, it seems pointless.
It really is. Like,
It's as natural as being born.
It really is. And then again, none of us have any real retrospect on what is on the other side, even if you've had glimpses from close to being dead, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
We won't know until we get there. You
and,
know?
And I reckon what's going to happen is we're going to cross over and we're going to go, what? What was I worried about? This is fucking awesome. I truly believe that. You know, you'll see your homeboy Jesus coming down and then people that you know, died before you. And I reckon it's going to be an experience. And when I look at it as something that I'm not saying that, I'm kind of looking forward to it. Like, yeah. I'm not really scared about it anymore. The only thing I would be scared of would be missing my girl, but I don't think that would, I don't think you have that emotion on, who knows? Once again, it's a speculation, but yeah, it's something that I used to be scared of too, but now I'm kind of looking forward to it without bringing it on, without speaking it into existence.
Yeah, but you know, again, none of us know our time. We're all online, yeah. You know, we're all online, whether we like it or not.
It's going to suck if you get a phone call this afternoon, hey, bro, Marcus fucking had a bad accident. Yeah, he's not going to make it. And you'll be like, well, he said he wanted to go.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
Wouldn't that be crazy. Fucking crazy? Let's touch with it. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, 100%. I'm like, I do got, you know, 4 hours of driving for this, you know.
Oh, so you're going to drive back to Arizona from here?
Yep. So I was going to fly in, but I'm such a procrastinator. My wife hates it sometimes, and I didn't get the tickets early enough for it not to make sense. So I was like, yep, I'm driving.
So when did you get here?
Literally, 15 minutes before I came in.
So you drove today, did this, and you're driving back.
Yeah.
George, how fucking great is that?
It's insane, dude. We appreciate it, man.
Absolutely.
Why do I feel, okay, explain this. I should feel, and I do feel very honored, but I also feel fucking bad.
Yeah, no, not at all.
No, but I do.
I absolutely wanted this.
One day we'll get a private jet, like limousine service. That'll just be super easy and cheap, like, you know?
Yeah, and then you won't have to worry about it ever.
Sheep? What are we doing with the sheep?
No, I said cheap.
Oh, cheap.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, fuck it out. I ain't doing it. Yeah.
Ride a sheep from Arizona to here. Jeez, then you should feel bad.
So how long did it take you to get here?
I thought it was 4 hours, but I woke up a little later because I was like, oh, I got 4 hours. And it ended up being like... just about under 5 hours, like 4 hours and 47 minutes.
Can I at least help you with some gas?
Oh no, you're perfect. I promise you. Yeah, no, honestly, gas wasn't that bad either. So I was like, dude, that's way.
You gotta let me sell you something for gas.
Man, I appreciate you, but I really wanted to come out and do this with you. I know we had talked about it so long ago.
Yeah,
and I'm putting it off, and I know I'm looking for a fight right now too. So I don't want to be trying to travel later on. I was like, I can't put this off with Marcus anymore. I need to get there. So I was like, this is happening.
What's your timeline for your next fight? Are you ready? Are you ready to go now? Are you ready to go? You're always in shape though, right?
Yeah. So it's just weight cuts at this point, right? Because I'm pretty active. Like even when I'm outside of camp, I'm trying to train for 2 times a day, at least 5 days a week.
How many days a week do you spar?
Only 2 days a week, but I'm sparring 2 days a week too. You know. I'm really trying to be there and be present during those times too. So as far as everything else goes, it's really just like eating management, right? What do we decide to eat? Are we done eating bread? Are we done eating these things that can keep us a little heavier, but aren't necessarily bad for us outside of camp, right? Mm. Because it gives me more energy to be focused on the things I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do 2 practices and hang out with my kids and go skateboard.
So you gotta have some rice and bread in there. Yeah.
So it definitely that's it for me. So I'm looking forward to whatever matchup I do get. So I'm looking forward to a call. Me and my manager have been talking, so I know something's going to be coming up here soon.
Who kind of interests you? Because your division is pretty stacked now, right?
100%.
Like, where the fuck does the bantamweight division become a main event for one? I just love how it's gone from the 55 was the fucking big stack, and now it's the bantam.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to be in there and be a part of it. There's so many crazy fights, so it's hard for me to get it. And I think that so many of them are exciting, you know, for so many different reasons, right? So it's like, it's going to be exciting just seeing what is up next and how that plays out. And then just kind of, you know, working up the ladder. So
do you look at these people that are higher ranked than you and maybe even the champ and look at them and go, come on. Are you that confident in yourself where you can go, come on, this is fucking easy work?
Man, no, that's not me at all.
That's not you?
I'm more like Justin Gaethje. I'm going there like, this guy's better than me, you know?
Yeah.
But that's right, because tonight I'm showing up, you know? Yeah. He's getting the best form of me tonight every time, you know? Because, I think it has to do with my upbringing and the people around and different things that I didn't like, did like, or all that extra stuff that kind of instilled in me not to really be focused on that type of energy, you know? Mm. It gives me the opposite of power, you know, when I start focusing on like, oh, I'm better, or I'm bigger, or I'm stronger, or I'm faster, or any of those things that, you know, that might be true, you know, those are aspects. And I do look at styles make fights, you know, and all that stuff like too. But there's a certain part that's not on paper that, you know, that is just unseen, you know? Yeah,
and you have that.
100%. Yeah, I do feel like I have that as well.
No, you do. You absolutely do. 100%. That's why I love watching you fight. And I hate it when I love my fighters and then I watch them fight and I get this anxiety and nerves come over me. I've never had it in watching any kind of sports before or anything like that. But, you know, when you like listen to a song and you get those goosebumps or you get that feeling, or it's the same with when I'm watching my favorite fighters step into that octagon, whereas you're not nervous, you understand that all of us are, right?
Absolutely.
As fans, as your family members. Now, that's another question. Does your family come and watch? The two kids are old enough to come and sit ringside now, right?
Yeah, so they haven't come to the UFC fight yet. And honestly, it's partly my fault, but partly not having tickets available. But my wife's the only one that's been up there for the fights. But my kids did come to a couple of my regional fights in town because they didn't really come at first. And then once they all were old enough, we were like, all right, I think it was like my fourth pro fight, we were like, I asked them, like, hey, do you guys want to come? You understand? Like, I'm like, I know you guys think dad can't be touched, but like, I plan to bleed, you know? I say it just like that to them, you know, whether or not it happens or not, you know?
Yeah, you got to prepare them just in case.
100%, like, you know? So just having those conversations with them and letting them know. So they haven't said they really wanted to come to the UFC fight yet.
Yeah. They watch it on TV though, right?
Yeah, they've watched all the fights, yeah.
So your son would get around with his buddies and watch it when dad's fighting. Fuck, imagine having your dad as a UFC fighter.
Jesus.
How good would that have been growing up?
Yeah, it would have been nice. Do they have kids that like say, oh, I looked your dad up on YouTube. Yeah. He's crazy.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, 100%.
And then the teachers are like, they watch out for that kid even more because they're like, oh, this kid can knock kids out.
I've been telling them that. And my kids, they train a little bit, but I always be telling them, like, hey, don't think that you guys can fight because I can fight. You know?
Yeah. Like, oh, no, I'd be picking everyone. Hey, my dad to the UFC. I'd be one of those real dickhead kids, eh? Yeah. Yeah. Nah. So you have a good relationship with your fans?
Yeah, I would say so. I get a lot of love, a lot of support. I try to be authentic with all the things I'm doing. And honestly, while still focusing on the things that are core, because I try not to lose myself in all the extra, which is great. I would love to achieve and have, you know,
shitloads of money.
Yeah, 100%. So that I could do incredible things.
McGregor money.
100%. You know,
yeah.
Like to do the things that he doesn't talk about as much that he is doing, the foundations that he's doing, that he's building, the charities that he's like, you know, he's, even though like everyone only sees what's up front, there's so many things that are positive that are happening behind the scenes that I want to tap into, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm still trying to figure the whole thing out, but I do feel like I have a good relationship with my fan base.
And you've got a good platform. You can fight. You're likable. People like you. But the main thing is that you deliver and people can relate to you, I think, because you're a dad and plus you know, you have all your other parts of Marcus McGee. It's not just the UFC. And as fans, we love that. Actually, George, can you grab Shane? I think you wanted to ask Marcus a couple of questions.
I got you.
Would you be able to grab him? He's a guy from Ireland and he's come over here for UFC 300. And when I told him that you were going to be on the podcast, he said, "Oh, can I come on and say hi?" So he's gonna, hello, mate. Hello, mate. Can you, have you been watching out there?
Yeah, we're keeping an eye. Yeah. We are indeed. Thanks a million for the opportunity, Marcus, to come on here and ask a question.
Yeah. So,
we'll just go right into the mic here.
Yeah, so tell everyone your name and where you're from, my friend.
Okay, I will indeed. My name is Shane McDonald. I'm from the west of Ireland, Galway. And, you know, we're just over for the week, myself and my wife, Dee, to watch the fights this weekend.
Heck yeah.
And of course, to meet yourselves as well. So thanks a million for that.
Yeah, no worries. Got a couple of questions for Marcus? A
couple of questions, Marcus. Congrats so far on your career in the UFC, and 3-0, and you've some unbelievable knockouts so far. First question really is, what's the best advice you got as a young fighter starting off in your career, and what advice would you give to a young fighter starting off in his or her career?
Not to rush so fast to get into fighting, to put pennies in the bank, you know? It's not necessarily about getting there and fighting. It's about developing a skill set that you can translate into fighting. And a lot of us focus on all the flashy stuff, and that's what attracts us. And it's all good and dandy, but that comes along with the years and years and years of putting in a penny every day on the good days, bad days, still a penny. A dirty penny is still a penny, you know? So that's what I would tell kids. Just put the penny in the bank, focus on that, and everything will translate.
Okay. Just another one, I suppose you kind of talked about it there. Are you scheduled for a fight, or have you anyone in mind coming up, or, you know, are you just going to, you know, go with flow, or have you anyone in mind basically to fight next?
Oh, man, a lot of guys in mind, and honestly, I'm not a calling out guy.
Why, Marcus?
You know, but there's a lot of great fights out there for it, especially in the position that I'm in right now. You know, like, I would like to move up the rankings, you know, so I'd like to fight somebody up above me for sure. That'd be the play. But again, you know, I do trust my matchmaker, Sean Shelby, and what he's doing. And I think that they make great matchups. So
yeah.
I'll just look forward to whoever they give. And hopefully I get a call soon. I wouldn't mind being one of those June fights. June 22nd. June 20th, International Fight Week.
Yeah. Okay.
Something like that would be awesome. So
yeah, I suppose if I had to be Sean Shelby now, I'd probably, there's a guy that's, you're 9-1, he's 9-1. And I have to say, Caelan Nacaran, he's Irish.
Oh, so, I did
so
see that.
He's won his last fight there last month. Yeah. He's 1-1. Obviously, you're 3-0. I think that would be a good matchup. If I was to make a fight, that's the fight I'd make.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, there's a lot of those, too, you know, and he's great, too. I'm definitely looking out for him, too. He looked great, and he's tough, and he's big, and he's strong. There's a lot of good attributes about him. So we'll see. But, again, like, for me, it's like I'd rather move, an opposite way, you know.
Yes.
Like, we're going to meet. I know. And that's one of the things I don't call it anyways, I think, more so, is because – we're going to meet, you know, if all of us keep on doing what we're here to do, getting better, performing, we'll meet when the time is right, you know?
Okay.
So I'm pretty okay with the object. I'm probably going to meet a lot of these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose, is there any, like, obviously all your fights in the States so far, haven't they been?
Yeah.
Is there any country that you'd love to fight in?
I'd love to fight in Japan or somewhere like that. That'd be awesome. You know, I just love that culture, and I've never been able to be over there. So that'd be sweet to fight out over there. Ireland, too. Ireland would be awesome. My last name is McGee, so I know there's Irish, some type of Irish traits there somewhere. I don't know if it's Irish or what's the...
No, that's Irish.
Yeah, that's so...
Scottish, Irish.
Scottish.
No, Scottish.
Yeah, Scottish is the other one I
found. Take McGee's Irish.
Yeah. So, I'd love to fight anywhere like that.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Very good. I suppose, what got you into it? How did you get into MMA? How did you start?
Because I was already into... I've always liked fighting, and I've always liked martial arts. But what actually got me to step into the gym for the first time was just being lost in life. Like, I had... My wife now was pregnant with our second child. I was working at Circle K, making no money, trying to go to school, trying to get in the military, doing things that were trying to get me away from doing all the other crazy stuff I'm doing drugs with my friends, being out partying, you know, doing all that type of stuff. So I was like, man, finally a gym opened up across the street. It was LA Boxing. It was right across the street from my job. So I just decided to go in there and just start trying to better myself in general and put myself in that atmosphere. And, it was a slow process, but it evolved into what it is now, essentially.
Okay, that's brilliant. That's unbelievable. I suppose, obviously, I'm over for UFC 300. Is there any fight you're looking forward to this weekend? Or that you're kind of right. That's the fight of the night, the people's main event. Or
there's so many bangers, but the people's main event has to be Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway, right? Like,
I cannot wait for that one.
That's just one of the ones where it's just like matchmaking
is. What does Max walk around at though? Because he's primarily a 145er.
Yeah, I'm sure he walks around probably like 170 regularly. Yeah. I'm sure like in the healthiest state, he's probably like around 170. But that's him probably trying to like minimize things, you know. Yeah. I can imagine him walking around 180, 185. Mm. You know, I can imagine him being able to do that.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And in his position, I think 178, 180 would probably be prime muscle, everything toned up, and then make the weight cut easy too. So I think he's not going to be undersized. Like, I don't think that's going to play as big a part.
I've heard that around the traps, but I don't know if that will be either. Yeah, I don't know.
He's more time really to kind of get up to 150. The last time he fought Dustin Poirier, I don't think. As in, like, did he put on that way? Had he that size?
Mm-hmm. Right, had he been carrying around that size? Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
I'm looking forward to the Cody Garbrandt fight, too, actually.
I'm absolutely. That's another one, that Cody Garbrandt versus Figueroa.
That's interesting, isn't it?
100%. And I've been a fan of Cody Garbrandt for a long time, you know.
And he's had his ups and downs, too. I'm glad to see he's making a bit of a comeback.
100%. Yeah, it's good for him. And, tough matchup, man. Tough matchup, dude. That's a banger, though.
Yeah,
you know?
Man. And that's the first fight of the night.
That opens the card. How is that?
300, right?
300. Yeah. You can't say it's not the best card, you know?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, I agree with you there. It's the two of the same fights. That's the first fight. That's pretty much it. But there is one thing, like, obviously I'm from Ireland. You mentioned gardening there. Like, I actually I love gardening. I love cutting lawns. I love doing the hedges. It's kind of my therapy as well. You finish work and you just go home and you get out for like 2 hours and I just get the fresh air. And definitely going to mention that when I go in, because it's just like,
nice.
That's exactly what I do. I go out there, water in between practices, you know, as I'm got to feed my dogs, do whatever. Go out there, water my plants, you know, maybe de-leaf if I need to, trim anything up I need to, get my feet grounded for a little bit, go, you know, go rest and then go right back. Yeah, yeah, of course.
I'd be out, I don't bore you too much, but yeah, you'd be out, you're cutting the lawn again. Of course I am. Like, it needs to be done. Like, I can't decide not to cut the grass. I like to see it like a tennis court, like the lines down the, you know what I mean? Looking, I take a lot of pride in my house. I like to see everything, like, you know, looking good.
But, looking up to shape. So that's one of the things I go into these fights too, thinking all the time. Like, I always start my week off like, before I leave, I'm like, yep, I'm going to have to come home and pull these weeds no matter what happens on Saturday. I got to come wash all these clothes no matter what happens on Saturday. Like, you know, I got to come trim all these bushes. Like, it's like it has to be done, and I'm the one that does it. So, you
that's
know,
amazing.
100% keeps you grounded.
Well, Shane, thanks for coming in. Hang around because we'll take a few photos after the show.
Definitely will do,
but enjoy your Vegas experience, my guy. Enjoy 300. Enjoy the PFL, and just fucking have a great time here. I've seen you and I've known you for a while on social media, so it's good to finally meet you in person.
100%, and thanks very much. Like, I love coming to, especially a UFC fight week. You can't beat it.
Yeah,
best promotion. Just meeting yourself as well, Marcus. You know, being at the press conferences, being at the weigh-ins, I love the whole week. I just think, and as well, I'm lucky my wife loves it too when she comes along.
Bonus.
No,
cheers, Shane.
Much.
Cheers, bud.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, bud. I love that. You know? I love the fans that are so passionate about the sport. So, fuck, man, I could have gone on for 2 hours with you, Marcus. I knew you were going to be a great guy. How I normally like to close things out, because I know you've got a big-ass drive, I always ask my guests this. Sometimes they can answer it, sometimes they can't. Marcus McGee, what is your message?
What is my message? My message is be your own hero. You know, all the things that you want to see change in, all the things that you want to achieve, that you want to see happening around you, be the change that you want to see.
My man. Thanks, Marcus. I really appreciate you driving fucking 10 hours to come and do the show.
Only 4.5.
But 4.5.
I'm going to take a stop by the PI too, real quick.
You're going to stop in the PI? Yes. Okay, cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on, bro.
Absolutely.
We'll do it again one day.
Sounds good. Sooner than later.
Now, you still, look at this. I put your little Riz Farmer thing behind you there, too.
Oh, heck yeah. That's what's up. Honestly, I was looking for my Riz shirt this morning, too.
I could have brought you one.
I should have. I was like,
John's a great guy.
Man, so phenomenal. And Riz has done so much for me in particular.
Yeah.
Built better out there in Arizona. Like, honestly, like, we've been doing so much work, met them in August, and we've just been grinding ever since. So it's been a beautiful thing.
That's great. And always good to do stuff for the community as well. So, Let's hear it for Riz Farmer. Guys, I appreciate you coming back to the channel. It was another awesome episode. Make sure you share, like, subscribe. If you do a little comment or just click the subscribe button, it takes 2 seconds. I'm doing all this beautiful content. I don't want money. I don't want nothing from you. Just your support and your love. All right? Stop calling me Conor McGregor from Wish.
Love.
This is Marcus Deegan for the Marcus Deegan Show podcast here at Sticky Paws. We're out.